This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our discussion with a passionate Marine Corps veteran of World War II, Harold Lowe of Las Vegas, Nevada. He served aboard the battleship USS Colorado in the Pacific. We heard about the two separate times he was wounded aboard that historic ship. You can find the bell from that battleship at the University of Colorado in Boulder, but there's a different memento that means a little more to Mr. Lowe. We'll hear about that in a minute.
And you mentioned a moment ago Harry Truman's decision, and here's a guy who inherits the presidency, has no idea that there is an atomic program, gets briefed on it, and within weeks has to make a decision whether to deploy it. But as you talked about your ship and all these others making plans for mainland Japan, if I read between the lines, I hear you saying that that decision to drop the bomb saved your life. Is that how you feel?
I do. In all probability, it did. And it probably saved the Colorado. We knew that the Japanese people had been trained as civilians to defend their country. It went right into the schools there. It wasn't like our country at all.
Mm-hmm.
We had been listening to Tokyo Rose on the radio, and she did affect a lot of people with her knowledge and everything. And, you know, Tokyo Rose was an American citizen, if I remember right.
Yeah, from Southern California.
Yes.
Did she mention your ship specifically? Did you hear her talk about the Colorado?
She sunk us a couple times.
But that's probably good, right? If you hear that, you know the rest that she's full of it with the rest of it, if you know your ship hasn't sunk and she says it has.
Yeah, we laughed at that when we heard it on the radio.
Did you enjoy the music anyway?
Oh, yeah. The program was entertaining, but we weren't allowed to listen to it continuously. But we did get to hear it enough when we weren't at general quarters and so forth to get a little breather and enjoy it.
So the bomb was dropped. The second bomb was dropped. And you guys, I guess, were back at Okinawa at the time?
No, we were loading up just off of Okinawa to go to Japan.
You're on your way to Japan.
We were taking on supplies and ammunition and so forth, and I forget the name of the island, but it was kind of a sheltered little island west of Okinawa that we went to load up, and other ships were loading there too.
So that's where you were when you found out Japan had surrendered?
Yes. We found out that she surrendered, I believe it was in August. The peace treaty was signed in September the 2nd in Tokyo Bay. We were within eyesight of the Missouri and could see the ceremony. It was quite a day because our super forts flew over the top and so forth, and these big Mahdi planes were low enough to where you could really get a look at them. And I'm sure that it affected the Japanese people when they saw these mighty might planes fly over in formation and the fighters and everything. It was quite a day.
That give you goosebumps, seeing all those B-29s up there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was like seeing the American flag waving.
Mm.
After the peace treaty signing, we prepared to take on prisoners of war that were in better health.
American prisoners of war?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, they were held by the Japanese, some of them as long as 4 and 5 years. And these were the better ones that were in better health, that they felt could live in our quarters with our diet and everything. And the ones that were real bad went aboard hospital ships or big carriers that could maybe give them a better facility. We voluntarily gave up our bunks for any of them that wanted to. We were used to sleeping on a deck or just anywhere.
And what can you tell us? And you said these are the better ones, but I imagine it was still pretty jarring to see the shape that the better ones were in.
It was scary.
What did they look like?
They looked like bones. There just wasn't any meat on most of them and so forth. They were able to walk, use their arms and legs and so forth, but they were just so skeleton like. When you see Holocaust victims, it's kind of a picture like that. They were really ready to die.
Yeah, they had been starved and beaten and tortured.
Yes.
And I imagine for a 19-year-old to see that, that's a pretty healthy dose of perspective, huh?
It made you really think.
So you had the privilege of escorting some of those ex-POWs back home to America.
Yes, some of them were so sick that we dropped a few off at Okinawa on the way back and a few off at Honolulu on the way back. And then we went under that Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco, and it was a real treat.
I see the look in your eye as you say that. And you described the B-29s as like the American flag waving, and it sounds like the Golden Gate was that way for you too.
Yes, same feeling.
So you're back in the States. What was it like to see your family again?
Well, I was so unsettled that they were glad I was back. But as far as being at the home with the my two sisters and the two stepsisters, it didn't fit in their minds. So I got home on Thanksgiving. By Christmas, why, they had a talk with me, and they felt it would be better if I made arrangements to move out and be more on my own.
And this is because of the effects that steady combat had on you?
That was part of it. I was a little wild. I didn't have a reputation in the neighborhood as being an angel. If I wanted to go somewhere, I didn't mind cutting through people's yards or picking an apple off of their apple tree when the apples were ripe. When there were all kinds of good ones on the ground, I still picked them off the tree.
But eventually you went to the university that Peoria is well known for.
Mm-hmm.
Bradley University, was that with the GI Bill?
Yes, that was under the GI Bill.
And you met your wife?
Yes. She was the secretary to the dean of education there at the time.
Uh-huh.
Well, I knew her before I went into service.
Oh, okay.
She, incidentally, was the girlfriend of a friend of mine that went into the Marine Corps with me, Rex Cummings. She was a very nice girl.
Well, I'm sure your four children and all your grandchildren are thankful that you made it back to reconnect with her.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't be here otherwise.
Yes.
I don't want to leave anything out, and one thing I definitely want to hear about, you had a pretty big surprise here within the last year.
That's correct.
So when you got out of the Marine Corps, did you keep any of your uniforms? What'd you do with them?
Well, I had my Marine Corps uniform, and I had it in a cover to keep it. It meant a lot to me. I always kept it in the closet in my bedroom, and in moving from San Diego to Las Vegas, more than 10 years after the war, I didn't open up all my boxes when I got to Las Vegas or unpack them. And when I did finally, why, my uniform was missing along with some other clothes. So evidently a box had disappeared, no trace of it, but it was too late to file any claim or anything. I just had to accept it that it was gone.
About what year was this when you realized it was gone?
In the 60s.
In the 60s. Mm-hmm. So a half century ago.
Yeah.
And it bothered you that it was gone.
Oh, yeah. It was upsetting to me because I had no idea. I felt that eventually I would probably have that in my casket with me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Over the last 50 years, did you think about that here and there? Did it ever pop into your mind again?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially on Armistice Day when I see the men in their uniforms and so forth. Any military occasion and so forth. Even here in Las Vegas, whenever I saw the Thunderbirds fly, why, it brought back memories. The Thunderbirds are from Nellis.
Yeah.
It always gave me a great feeling. I always smiled when I saw those guys.
Yeah, so here your whole life, so your father was a World War I veteran, so you'd grown up marching on Armistice Day your whole life. You think about this, your uniform's been missing for 50 years, and then you get a phone call?
I got a phone call.
What'd they say?
They asked me a bunch of questions, and I really didn't want to answer anything. You know, they wanted to know my full name. And
sounds like a scam, huh?
Yeah, and was I in the Marine Corps, and what dates was I, and so forth. I didn't realize it at the time, but they had my jacket, and they had this information in one of the pockets.
Mm-hmm.
And so they just wanted to make sure that I was the right person that this belonged to.
On that phone call, did they eventually tell you, we have your jacket?
Yeah. First of all, they identified themselves. This was a retired gunnery sergeant from the Marine Corps and two of his daughters. The daughters bought this off of a program where it was advertised for sale.
Uh-huh.
Not knowing who it belonged to or anything, because of their father being a retired Marine and so forth, they thought that they would buy that for him as a present, a memento to kind of keep and so forth. And so they bought it. And then they found this paper inside eventually, and they talked it over with him, and they wanted to return it to whoever it belonged to.
So you get a package here in Las Vegas?
Yes. I wanted to open it right away, and my daughter says, no, don't open it, Dad. She says, it might be a story. I said, I don't need a story about my jacket, honey. She says, but other people might like to know about it.
Mm-hmm.
And she talked to a veteran reporter on the Review Journal, and so he told me not to open it, to wait till he got there.
Yep.
And they appeared with a TV station here, as well as a newspaper photographer, and did a story and showed me opening it.
And I'll have that linked at hometownheroesradio.com, so you can go back and watch that moment, the moment that can't be repeated. What did that feel like for you to hold that after all those years?
I had a fear that it might be a joke.
Ah.
So I thought, God, if my uniform isn't in here. So I was so relieved that it was in there,
mm-hmm.
and I recognized it immediately. So then I felt very elated, and it made me feel very good.
I imagine it made you feel pretty good about the people who sent it to you, too, because they didn't need to do that.
No, they didn't. I thanked them. I tried to show my gratitude monetarily, and they absolutely refused it.
Mm-hmm.
They were just thrilled to death that it got home.
Have you been able to meet them or just talk on the phone?
Only talk to them on the phone.
Have you been able to visit the National World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C.?
No. I'm sure that it's a great feeling, especially to a lot of veterans, to know that their efforts weren't in vain,
mm-hmm.
that the country recognized it.
And I imagine if you did go, you would have some specific people to think about when you look at that wall of gold stars that represents 400,000 Americans who didn't come home.
Yes.
Those of us who weren't born yet, who weren't alive for all of this, what do we need to know about those who gave their lives, so many of them that you knew personally?
Well, the best thing is there's still enough of us to give them a direct experience of why they served at the time and what the conditions were and so forth, because so much of it isn't taught in the schools. And a personal history relationship with either a grandfather or someone else's grandfather is very important, because a lot of times the only way you can get the emotional feeling is from someone who's experienced it.
Mm-hmm.
A book can't do that to you ordinarily.
That's why this program exists. And before I forget, I want to say thank you for serving our country. And thank you for telling us a story that only you could tell us. When you think back on it now, 70 years ago, being wounded a couple times, all the close calls, did you ever feel like somebody was looking out for you?
When I had time, I did. I felt that more than ever, that there was a God. And it made me, I had some comfort to know that I wasn't alone.
What would you say you're most proud of?
I really can't say that I'm proud of anything that I did for the country, because in my heart I know that being born and raised in the United States was more than offset by anything that I could give to the country. It's kind of a feeling of indebtedness that you owe it.
I know people can hear in your voice, and I can certainly see in your eyes how powerful that emotion is for you. And this is what you're talking about when
yes.
you said seeing the American flag or the B-29s or the Golden Gate Bridge. That's just your gratitude for the nation.
Yes.
What does America represent to you?
An opportunity for all the young people to live their lives fully, you know. They can understand the past. We can all understand the past. And that's part of being prepared to live the future. And when we absorbed how we got here, how other people made it possible for us to be here, I think that more people will realize the responsibility we have as citizens.
Amen. What a perfect way to express what I'm sure a lot of folks are feeling as they hear your remarkable story. That is Harold Lowe of Las Vegas, Nevada. We're out of time for now, but I hope that you're going to be joining us next time as we're reminded again, perhaps as eloquently as we were today by Mr. Lowe, that freedom is not free.